All right, so you've seen a little bit of this talk already. We're going to use seasonal forecasts to try and make some money for grain farmers in southwest Western Australia. And this is work with Centold Asheng and a number of other people. So just an overview of the talk. We're going to simulate growing a wheat crop in southwest Western Australia using the wheat model APSIM. And we're going to explore two different nitrogen application strategies. So one is throwing so much nitrogen on that you're maximising your income. This is quite risky. Or you're going to only put a dollar of nitrogen on if you get $2 in return, net. And this is a risk-averse strategy, but it is in fact a realistic strategy and is roughly what the farmers there already do. And we're going to vary the nitrogen rate using a seasonal forecast. So when the forecast for May to October rainfall is above median, we'll put on the amount of nitrogen indicated for above median years. And when the forecast is for below median, we put on the amount of nitrogen indicated for below median years. And the results we'll come up with are these. The forecast is much more valuable for the realistic nitrogen management strategy. And this is a bit of an eye-opener for us because in the past, I and others in Australia have always assumed farmers will maximise their income and we were finding the seasonal forecasts were not very valuable. But the seasonal forecasts are really valuable when we look at a realistic management strategy. So this is the most important outcome of this project. I'll show you that when we use a forecast like this, it requires fewer good years to get better returns, and so this is a hedge against climate change. Even if the seasons get worse, if we manage better, we can make as much or more money. And the third thing is that I can show that there is an 80% chance of the forecast paying off after just using it for 3 years. So it's worth sticking with it. And there's a couple of papers written up on this work. So you've seen this diagram before. This is where I'm working in a place called Niabing. I used to call it Niabing until someone from there dissuaded me of that. It's in southwest Western Australia. It's reasonably dry, but they can grow a reasonable wheat crop there. So we simulate the wheat crop using APSIM. We just use a local variety of wheat, and it's a clay soil. And we do a number of things that try and simplify the problem so we're just looking at the climate effect. So we reset the soil moisture to no plant available stored soil water at the start of each year. We reset to 50 kilograms of mineral nitrogen per hectare each year. We have a sowing rule that plants after there's enough rain. And we apply nitrogen at sowing up to 80 kilos. And if we are wanting to apply more than 80 kilos, then we apply the remainder 4 weeks later. And we just calculate a simple gross margin based on prices from when this study was done, which is back in about 2009. So, as I said, the experiment's designed to isolate the climate effect because there's a lot more going on, and in practice, a farmer really needs to consider all these management decisions, and these management decisions may interact in a non-linear way. We haven't got that far yet. They're thinking about the problem. That's quite complex. Let's keep it simple for the moment. So the question is, how much nitrogen fertiliser do you want to add? So this is a plot. Horizontal axis is how much nitrogen you put on. Vertical axis is what is the gross margin. Using 100 years of climate data, this is the average. So you can see that 60 to 80, well, in fact, here we go. This, to maximise your gross margin, you would put 80 kilos of nitrogen on each year. And that is just based on a long-term climatology. If you were a little risk-averse and you only put a dollar of nitrogen on to get a dollar back, then you would put 60 kilos on. If you were a realistic farmer and only put a dollar of nitrogen on if you were to get $2 back, you would not put nitrogen on in this place ever. It's quite a difficult place to farm, and farmers typically do not put nitrogen on here. So why are farmers risk-averse? This is the thing I couldn't understand for a while. So what we have here are gross margins for the period that we simulated, which is 1980 to 2006, and the reason it's that set of years is because that's the set of years that we had Poama climate forecasts for. So the green vertical bars are for the risk-averse farmer, and the red vertical bars are for the farmer who puts the 80 kilos of nitrogen on and goes for it. So clearly he does a lot better. There's a lot more really good years there, but there's a number of bad years. And this thing is not symmetric, because if a farmer loses money in 3 years, he can lose the farm. The bank will say, no, that's it. I want my loan back. And it just so happened in this sequence, we had the first 3 years were negative. That was fortuitous, but you can also see there are some other bad years. So a single bad year can set a farmer back for quite a while, because then he cannot afford to do very much the next year or the year after, and they may be good years, and so he can't recover. So that's why farmers do not take this risky strategy. Let's have a look at the number of years that it takes to be 95% sure of breaking even. So if you just take a few years and say, what is my range of mean income over a few years, looking at using the sequences from the previous slide, just for a small number of years, it's a big range. Come on, mouse work. Oh, there it is. Okay, so for a small number of years, you get a big range of possible outcomes. And as you have more years, you get a smaller range of possible outcomes until you reach the long-term outcome of, I think it was 96. But it takes you, and this is the 95%, all outcomes, all means, if you like, are 95% of them are within these two curves. It's hard to explain this diagram. So what this means is that it takes you 3 years to be 95% sure that you're going to break even for the risk-averse farmer. If you were the risky farmer, putting all the nitrogen on you can, it would take you 6 years to be 95% sure that you're going to break even. Again, this is another way of thinking about why farmers are risk-averse. Now, I'm going to come back to the bottom part of that diagram later in the talk, so I'll just mention that now. All right, so how much nitrogen do we put on in wet years versus dry years? Because if we have a forecast, we can split the years into two groups. So this black curve is what happened if you use all years. It's the curve you've seen already, and you would put 80 kilos on. If you would just use the wet years and you use the risk-averse strategy of $2 for a dollar on for $2 return, then you would put this much nitrogen on, 60 on. And in the dry years, you wouldn't bother putting any on. But this is different, right? Now we can use a forecast to put a different amount of nitrogen on in wet and dry years. So how does that affect the gross margins? Well, I've talked about POAMA, so we don't need to talk about that anymore. I did want to talk about the forecast skill of POAMA just a little bit. Here is NIBING. The correlation skill of POAMA for May to October rainfall is 0.32, which is pretty low. Now, normally I would think of a correlation of you need it above 0.4 to be really of any sort of value. But it turns out that the hit rate, how well it does at getting above or below median rainfall, is 70%. So it's not getting the amplitude right, but it's getting the sign right. And that turns out to be valuable. This is the old version of POAMA. So now the top line is the diagram you've just seen, and the bottom line is the new version of POAMA. You can see there is more skill over most of Australia. It is redder. And there is a better hit rate over most of Australia. It is bluer. So we are making progress in the skill of our model. And the next version of POAMA had better be better. Again, it should be. All right, so now let's look at the gross margins for green is if is without a forecast, so not putting any nitrogen on at all, because that's what the risk-averse farmer would do. And the blue is if you use POAMA to put nitrogen on in the good years and not in the bad years. And you can see it makes a big difference, and you do really well. But there are some years where you don't do so well. So down the bottom here, the triangles indicate the years where the rainfall was below median, and the X's indicate where POAMA got the forecast wrong. So for example here, 1997, it was a below median year. POAMA got the forecast wrong and said it would be a reasonable year. The farmer put a lot of nitrogen on and lost. So the forecast doesn't always win, but it does better than if you didn't have a forecast. So without a forecast, the average income per hectare, gross margin, is 94, and with a forecast, 161. It's a big difference. So if we sum that up over a farm of 2,500 hectares, the risk-averse farmer, if he just uses climatology, would make 235,000, with a PIMA forecast, 402,000. If we had a perfectly correct forecast of above or below median, 490,000. So we're 66% of the way to the best we could possibly do. That's the risk-averse farmer. The risky farmer who maximises GM makes a lot more money just using climatology, 410. And the forecast buys him almost nothing, 420,000. If we had a correct forecast, he would do a lot better. But the point is, the forecast has not been very valuable to a farmer who is already trying to maximise his gross margin. But this farmer wouldn't survive for very long. That's why, in practice, that is not occurring. All right, how long does it take for a forecast to pay off? I think this is a really critical question. If you're going to look at the 95% chance of exceedance, then the green curve is the bottom of those curves I showed you earlier and had so much trouble explaining. We want the blue curve that is using a forecast to exceed the green curve. So after 6 years, you've got a 95% chance that using a forecast will do better than if you didn't use a forecast. And I think that's the sort of number we have to get across to a farmer. Don't use a forecast for 1 year, and if it fails, then not use it anymore. Stick with it. In the long run, you'll win. In the same way, in the long run, a casino wins. At the 80% level, so it depends how sure the farmer wants to be. If he wants to be 80% sure the forecast has made him money, it only takes 3 years. And this is with a relatively modest skill for a forecast system. The other thing we can look at is the importance of good years. So these are some numbers that people told me about years ago, and I've only just managed to come around to calculate them. 80% of the farm income is made in 40% of the years. So the good years are really important. So this is the horizontal axis is the percentage of years, and the vertical axis is the percentage of your long-term income. So these are the best years here, and 80% of your income is made in 40% of years, and there's some years here where you're losing money, which is why the curve goes back down. So this is without using a forecast. If you were to use a forecast, you can make the same income in 15% of years. So this is the hedge against climate change. So to summarise, you can increase your gross margin on a farm in two ways. You can just throw more nitrogen on in every year, but it's risky. Or you can be smart about putting nitrogen on and only put nitrogen on when the forecast is for a good year. And we've shown that the PIMA forecast is valuable to a conservative farmer, but not to a risky farmer. And a moderately skillful forecast, where we get 19 out of 27 of the years correct in terms of getting a correct above or below median forecast, will increase this particular farm profit from 235 to 402,000. It's a big difference. And the payoff time is somewhere between 3 and 6 years, depending on how certain you want to be of that payoff time. This is a little schematic that Santold and I came up with to kind of indicate that. And so the horizontal axis is risk, so it could be number of loss years or your mean loss, and the vertical axis is profit. So the current farmer's practice is risky to increase the profit to this level. So you could also think about the horizontal axis being nitrogen fertiliser. If you use a forecast, you can increase your profit to the same level, but increase the risk or the amount of nitrogen you put on less. That's the benefit of the seasonal climate forecast. Thank you.
Thank you.
the question is, can we use our models to predict the mineralised nitrogen in the soil? It's a really good question. I think we could do it. We haven't done that. Yes, I think that's why farmers don't need to put that extra on there, is because they do have that mineralised nitrogen. But is that something you can measure? Do you need a forecast for that?
By the time you measure it, sometimes it's too late to make a prediction.
Right, so a short-term prediction would help. Right.
Thank you. Yeah, do you have this year a gut feeling on that 3 to 6 year time frame?
So the question is, will the payoff time decrease as the model skill gets better? Ooh, I'm really guessing there. As the skill gets better, everything gets better, but the question is how fast. We may knock a year or two off it. You're never going to get the payoff time down to 1 year. I don't think the models will be that skillful. There's a predictable component to climate, and there's an unpredictable component to climate that we're never going to get. So I think the payoff time is always going to be a few years. But I think so long as it is under, you know, something like 6 or 5, then I think we can convince the farming community that it's worth using. You know, if it was 30 years, I don't think we could convince them.
I'm thinking about that graph you showed where you had the two nitrogen strategies with a 95% chance of breaking even. And I'm wondering why you chose breaking even as a threshold. Surely these guys want to make money. So what, and the inflection angle of those curves was different. And so if you set it at a threshold of, you know, $50 or $100 return, would that answer change? It was the one where you had the bimodal or the sort of the normal distribution.
Oh, okay.
So I guess I'm just curious about why choosing break-even.
Well, you could choose any level you wanted. So break-even was the most obvious thing, I think, to choose, just to indicate a time scale. But you could raise that line.
But what if you raise it to 100? You see the difference in those two graphs? You'd never get there.
That's right. So the risky farmer would get there, but how long would he hang on to the farm? So it's a good point though. So yeah.
I want to sort of go try to combine your two talks here. On your first talk, you were saying how you have to get this idea of probabilities on. Okay, this is the percent correct. Okay, and this is and with this one, you got this as a payoff, and you compare various strategies. But for the short-sighted, have you compared, for example, what the expected yield, well, expected value would be if you were correct for your forecast, minus what would happen if you were wrong for your forecast for a single year?
No, we haven't done that, but I think we should do that. Have a look at that. Yeah, perhaps I think
because you're saying that they're here. You're going to be correct 40% of the time. Okay, and that means you're not going to be correct 60% of the time.
Well, it's actually the other way around. I think we'll be correct 60% of the time or 70% of the time for this particular model.
But giving that for a short-term basis may also be a way of showing the value.
Yeah, I think that's what we're thinking about.
There are farmers that put less on in all years, so I'm just curious, would that be as bad as putting more on in all years?
They're less likely to lose the farm if they put less on in all years, but they may not make as much as they could. But this place, Niobing, they generally don't put any on, and they do survive there. They can do better if they put it on sensibly, and that's where the forecast is advantageous. But it's not a symmetrical problem. It's, you know, you're better off being conservative if you want to hang on to the farm.
Okay. Thank you very much, Richard.